Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Today we begin a series of conversations with the top candidates to be Tulsa's next mayor. Under the changes to the city charter enacted in 2011, this year's election will be nonpartisan with a primary on June 11th. If no candidate receives 50% of the vote in that vote, the two top vote-getters will meet up again in the general election later, with the winner serving a term of 3 years beginning in December. If one of the candidates do receive 50%, they will be declared the winner and again will take office in December. Tomorrow and Thursday, we'll speak with former District 8 City Councilor Bill Christensen and incumbent Mayor Dewey Bartlett. But today, my guest is Tulsa's 38th Mayor, Kathy Taylor, who served from 2006 to 2009. Taylor has previously served as Oklahoma's Secretary of Commerce and Tourism from 2003 to 2006 under Governor Brad Henry. After leaving office as Tulsa mayor, she returned to the state to head up Oklahoma's two unsuccessful applications for the federal government's Race to the Top competition for extra federal education funding. She joins us today to talk about the top issues confronting the next Tulsa mayor. Kathy Taylor is my guest today. Kathy Taylor, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
I'm so glad to be here.
Well, the first question is specific to you because you were mayor one term ago.
Yes.
And you decided not to run for re-election. But now you said, I want to be a mayor again. What went into the decision-making process?
Well, you know, not running for re-election was probably one of the hardest decisions I've ever made. But our city was seeing what we saw at the national level, and that was partisan gridlock. And I had counselors tell me that they were going to vote against projects that they thought made sense for Tulsa, Oklahoma, because I was of a different political party. And I just didn't think that was a positive environment. I thought it would change. As you know, it didn't. When Mayor Bartlett came in, the counselors of his party issued a recall against him. And so now we have a very different council. I've met with almost every single one of them, both during the campaign and before. And I think they have a true long-term vision and a belief in the future of Tulsa. And I would look forward to working with them.
Since you brought that up, let's talk about the nonpartisan nature of this election and all future municipal elections. You think that's a good step for the city?
I think it's an absolutely great step for the city. You know, I enjoyed a lot of bipartisan support among voters when I ran before. I feel like I'm enjoying that again as we have seen hundreds and hundreds of volunteers of all ages and political beliefs come through our volunteer office. I think Tulsa at the local level is about safety and it's about education and it's about infrastructure, building that environment that produces a good environment for great jobs and a great community.
Uh-huh. Now, in this particular election, because we've had partisan labels, everybody knows where they come from. Do you think it will be a bigger factor in years to come?
Yeah, I think as we get used to nonpartisan elections, it will certainly be less of an issue. I know in Oklahoma City, when they've had nonpartisan elections for a long time, one time they actually tried to, one candidate tried to campaign on a partisan basis, and mayors of both parties came together and just said, don't do this. This is not what our city's about. And I think that same thing will happen in Tulsa.
Well, what's the biggest challenge for the next Tulsa mayor in the next 3 years? What do you see that as the biggest challenge for the next mayor?
Well, I always look at challenges as opportunities. And I think one example of that was when we had the ice storm. We ended up planting 10,000 new trees as a result of that. So I think really the challenge is to take the opportunity to get Tulsa at the top of the lists that make us one of the most attractive cities in the nation, rather than the top of lists that make people concerned about living here. A healthy city, a city that is safe, a city that we show can provide a great public education system, and a city that is the most transparent in terms of where people's tax dollars go. I think that's the challenge, and I think there's a real opportunity for Tulsa. I actually think this June 11th election is a pivotal tipping point for Tulsa's future, to take the challenges that we've seen and turn them into very positive opportunities.
You talked about transparency. Where do you feel like the city is not that transparent in where funding goes?
Well, look at the city of Austin. Look at the city of Chicago. They don't put static proposed budgets on the website. What they do is, you know, in real time, where your money's being spent. If you see a street project going on and you think that they have redone that street three times in a short period of time, you can go online and immediately see this is what's happening. You can see who's getting the contracts and the subcontracts on a real-time basis. It's not just looking at a proposed budget. It's actually following the dollars and seeing where and how and with whom they're being spent. And if you move to an open data platform, as the federal government does, has on medical research, as Austin, Chicago, Boston, New York City have done, it's easy to do, and it's really what the citizens deserve.
Is it costly? Because at this point, you know, we're looking at essentially flat budgets or 1 or 2% increases from year to year.
It's not costly at all. In fact, there's a group called Tulsa Web Devs who have already put together some amazing apps for the city of Tulsa. But because we're not on an open platform system, they're a little bit difficult for people to use them. But there are people out there that would help do that. I had a conference call with the IT director for the city of Chicago, because in 18 months, they've done amazing things. I said, how'd you do this? And he said, we got two really smart guys, and we said, make sure everything is accessible to people on their tablets or their iPhones. And if you run into any roadblocks, let us know. And they have, again, Austin and Chicago are great websites to look at to see what citizens can learn about their city, even when their street's going to be plowed if there's a snowstorm.
That sounds like an interesting idea. You mentioned ongoing capital development funding and things for the streets. Are you talking about changing the priorities for the streets? So things that are already in the pipeline, you perhaps, if there's other streets that are in worse shape, you sort of change those plans, or what exactly?
Well, the Public Works Department has a pavement condition index that they use to analyze when streets should go into cycle for being redone. But in addition, one of the things that we proposed and ultimately was adopted by the Transportation Advisory Board and I believe the City Council was a planning process that's called Complete Streets. So you don't just look at the street that is driven on, but you look at the entire infrastructure and plan accordingly for sidewalks, for bike lanes, if that's an area they're needed, and to make sure that when you tear up a street to put in a water line or a sewer pipe, that you tear it up once, not three times. I will just tell you, it's funny because the street...
When in the mayor in downtown, that was the case.
Exactly what we did. 50 blocks of downtown streets. We tore them up once. We put in high-speed internet conduits. We could get high-speed internet to downtown buildings. And we got it all done before the BOK Center was open. It's that kind of really joint planning that needs to occur so people know their tax dollars, their hard-earned tax dollars, are being spent very wisely.
Let's talk a little bit about public safety. That's been an issue in the campaign. How do you see Tulsa's current public safety needs? How do you see as far as our resources for them? What do you see as the big issues?
Well, I think public safety has to be a city funding priority, but it has to be both on the operating side and the capital side, because there are needs for human capital and there are needs for up-to-date equipment. We implemented a program that has since been widely expanded and updated in other cities called CompStat, which allowed us to understand where crime was occurring and had occurred on a real-time basis, and to be able to deploy officers and also inform neighborhood associations so that they could help with the community policing aspect of the needs in our city. We put in place, we received a grant and put in place gang intervention workers on the streets. We have to do that again. People are concerned right now about homicides because they get a lot of media attention. But there are other crimes that are even more concerning, daytime burglaries. People don't feel safe going out on the streets during the day. Those businesses, those small businesses, which comprise 92% of the Tulsa MSA's jobs, are not going to thrive. So it's got to be a priority, and we can't do things that might be nice to do, whether that's a citizen survey or a consultant here and there, if we can't hire police officers, and we have to fight hard to keep those officers on the street.
Now, you know, I think this is one of the misnomers. The city of Tulsa, for the most part, is a fairly safe city. There are areas that are very unsafe. and that really fuels a lot of our crime. How would you dedicate resources to those areas that are really unsafe?
So I might disagree with you a bit, and that's one of the things that we found very interesting about the CompStat program. We had public meetings every month where citizens could come in and see where crime was escalating. What we know is is statistically around the country, for example, if a burglary occurs on a street, it's likely that other burglaries will occur on that same street. And so there are ups and downs in the kinds of crimes that I think day-to-day concern people, and that is, I think, burglaries and robberies, of course, when they are home, but burglaries during the day are very invasive. So we need to work more strongly with the neighborhood associations and develop more neighborhood associations. I had a great meeting with a group of neighborhood leaders recently, and they had an awesome idea to develop a council of the presidents of all the neighborhood associations and then begin to mentor other neighborhoods that did not have neighborhood associations so that we could have every neighborhood in our community represented by a neighborhood association working with the police department, working with the crime prevention network, which I believe needs to be better funded. That's really how we will address crime in this community, in addition to education. When I took office, 26% of our crimes were being committed by juveniles, and we immediately worked to do a summit with the U.S. attorney and to identify how we could impact those juvenile crimes. And two things came out of that: the Mayor's Mentoring to the Max program and the Community Intervention Center to intervene in the lives of those kids, keep them from committing crimes.
Well, that sort of segues into my next area, which is economic development. Now, as you well know, there are many facets beyond what a mayor can control towards economic development. But what are the things a mayor can do to help businesses relocate, help businesses develop, and just increase the economic development within the community?
Well, it's a great question. And having been on the side of a business that was being recruited to move to a community, and then the side of Secretary of Commerce recruiting businesses and helping businesses in our state, and then as mayor, you know, government doesn't create private industry jobs. Government has to set the table so that it's an attractive place. And when I was Secretary of Commerce and mayor, the question I was asked most often by businesses is this: in a global economy where I have to be extremely competitive, how will you assure me that you're investing in education to provide me a quality workforce? And secondly, in a recent business roundtable that I did, they said, how will you help me create an environment in Tulsa where we can recruit the talent we need from other communities if it's not being grown here? BOK Center, One Oak Field, Guthrie Green, the great vibrancy downtown, what's happening and has happened at the river, the work we did to make this a bike-friendly city designated and increase our bike trails. So it's education, it's vibrancy of our entertainment in all the ways that is looked at, and it's a safe city because if you want to attract employees. The interesting statistic is that 92% of the businesses in the Tulsa MSA have 100 or fewer employees. 84% have 10 or fewer employees. Those are the companies that we need to pay attention to because they're the ones that are going to add the jobs of tomorrow if we convince them to stay here and we give them a good environment to expand. Kauffman Foundation, private foundation dedicated to free enterprise, recently gave Tulsa a D in terms of the ease of opening a small business in Tulsa. And that goes back to the online open data platform, ability to not have to go down to City Hall to fill out 10 different permits, but to do like many communities do, you do one permit for your project. And rather than you going from floor to floor to floor, the city comes together to make it easy for you to open your small business, have a new housing development, do infill development, etc.
Yeah. Now, let's talk a little bit about public education. City mayor really has a whole lot of an influence in that area, but what can you do to help the city education grow and do a better job?
Well, I've met with the superintendent of Tulsa Public Schools and Union Public Schools because they know when I went back to work for Governor Henry as chief of education, strategy, and innovation that education's my priority. And the mayor can help, and mayors and cities all over the country with our type of governance system do help. We can help by doing joint infrastructure planning. We can help by doing what we did, recruiting mentors to support mentoring programs. We can help by raising our hand and helping the community understand that public education has to be a community-wide priority, that if kids aren't reading at grade level in third grade, their likelihood of success in life statistically is not great. So we need to focus on a community dialogue that the mayor has a significant part on. We need to support the school system, and we need to let the school system understand what we require of them for a healthy city.
My guest today is Kathy Taylor. She was the former mayor from 2006 to 2009, a former Oklahoma Secretary of Commerce. Before that, she's one of three candidates to be the next mayor of the city of Tulsa. The election is on June 11th, and she's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. So we start a series with the mayoral candidates. You, in talking about economic development, you mentioned one thing that helps us segue into the next area, which is you mentioned young workers and keeping them here. And this is a statistic. It's sort of interesting to me as a late boomer, and is that this is the first generation that sees a car not as a source of independence, but as a burden. Increasing numbers of young people, they want to take a bus. They want to take a train. They want to ride a bicycle. They want to have walking-friendly atmosphere. They want to live close to their work so they can walk to it. Let's talk about public transportation. This is something we keep talking about in this city, but nothing really changes. Now, we do have a rapid transit plan that's looking at one expanded bus line. But when you look at cities that we aspire to, they all have mass transit and on a much larger scale than the city of Tulsa.
Right. I agree. And I hear that, interestingly enough, I hear that from young people. I also hear it increasingly from seniors who either no longer can drive or choose to drive and feel very homebound because of that. So we have to develop our transit system. And it's not an overnight solution, but it has to be integrated into our thought processes and our planning and everything we do. And I'll give you a great example of how that happened in Minneapolis-St. Paul. Mayor Ryback was in office when the tragedy happened in Minneapolis-St. Paul. The bridge fell. They needed to get that bridge up quickly for commerce. They brought him a bridge plan. The bridge plan they brought him would never accommodate mass transit, would never accommodated rail. And he said, I'm not going to sign it. I know I don't have the money today, and I might not in 10 years, but if I build a 50, 100-year bridge without the ability to accommodate transit, I'm not planning for the future. Tulsa has to plan for the future if we want to retain the young people and attract more young people to take the jobs of tomorrow, and if we want to allow our aging demographics in the city, our seniors, to have a great quality of life. And I believe it can be done. I think BRT is the first step. Other cities have seen that once you have one successful line like that, then people begin to change their mind about the need for transit. We also need to require, where it makes sense, sidewalks, look at bike lanes, have alternate modes of transportation, and make it easier in the areas where it makes sense for density to occur, so those young people that want to have young families in a dense environment where they can walk to the park, walk to the grocery store, walk to school and work, have that ability.
Now, I was looking at the budget the last couple of days, and I think as a chief executive, I would be hard-pressed to find a way to be able to fund mass transit. Actually, there's a small cut in mass transit for the next year. That's because they're converting to a CNG and they hope to reduce fuel costs. But I don't see where there's a way to increase it to the level where, you know, it is a viable option for a lot of people in the city to use.
Well, we brought in Jack Crowley when I was in office with a grant from OU Tulsa, and he used to be the planning director for the city of Tulsa, and he's one of the premier transportation advisors really in the nation, a professor now. And he gave us many alternatives as to how we could do public-private financing of certain hubs of transit. Those are things that need to be looked at. I believe also we need to look at a regional transit system. jobs and needs and commerce don't stop at city lines. We need to be a better partner in transit with Broken Arrow, with Sand Springs, with Owosso. That gives us a broader reach, broader ridership. We just have to look at things differently. We can't just immediately run to the budget and say, where are the dollars that I can grab from that tight budget? When we didn't have the money to expand the Gilchrist Museum, we went to the University of Tulsa and said, let's have a partnership. They've now raised well over $14 million. We're going to have a new research center there. And people said before, oh, the Gilchrist Museum is what it is. We can't expand it. The city doesn't have the money. We found a way to do it. I think there's a way with transit.
What do you think in general about these public-private partnerships, you know, the zoo, the golf courses, and Gilchrist?
Well, I think they have to be very carefully documented because they are city assets. They are owned by the citizens, and they have been funded for decades by the citizens. But I think that they can be increasingly helpful in a tight economy, also providing areas of expertise. You know, TU has chemists, has historians that have made the Gilchrist and the documents and collections that they have a completely different tourism and research attraction to Tulsa than ever before. The golf course contract, when I got into office, we were actually losing money. And Dale McNamara, thank her, came in, renegotiated it for us, and she told me the other day that now the city's actually receiving a little bit of revenue from that. So they're important, but the city has to be a partner, not just turn over control of assets.
Now, a moment ago, you mentioned density as a young people's factors. And, of course, that's one of the big issues today is, you know, a city grows and eventually it sprawls and all of a sudden the tax dollars are in the surrounding communities as opposed to the home community. How do you build density as a mayor? And let's talk about a specific as well, the surface parking moratorium in downtown. What do you think about that?
I think the surface parking moratorium is a good idea in downtown.
Yeah, we won the award for the best downtown.
Right, that's a list
I'd like. The downtown crater.
I'd like to be off it. So remember, the city of Tulsa did not have its own planning, really planning department. We had some great planners, but it really wasn't. We didn't have an updated comprehensive land use plan outline until we redid Planet Tulsa. It was 30 years old. So when you don't have a plan, just like you don't have a plan in business, then things grow in an easy way. It's easier to develop where there isn't an aging urban environment. But now we do have that plan, and where it makes sense, it's time to begin to implement that and to look at what other cities have done. Multi-level parking structures with retail at the base, so you don't have a dark street that someone has to walk down, and incentivizing through work with the Tulsa Parking Authority, Tulsa Development Authority, Tulsa Industrial Authority, incentivizing those types of developments.
Now, a lot of those surface parking areas are in private hands in many parts of the downtown.
Well, I think that given the right support, encouragement, and incentives, that I'm sure those private developers would be interested in having more parking spots to the extent they're needed with a retail component on the bottom floor. It's revenue for them, but we don't need any more surface lots. The more surface lots we have, the fewer people we have downtown, the less revenue and less density we're able to build.
You mentioned city planning. Planet Tulsa happened during your watch, and a lot of people say not a lot has happened on that. And I look at also the Pearl District. You know, they had the forms-based code. The first thing the city does is says we're going to grant an exception to the forms-based code for a private business to move and expand. How do you get citizens involved when you do all this planning and then they can't see any results in the case of Planet Tulsa, or the first thing the city does is violate what that they came together and approved?
Well, I think there are a lot of people that didn't understand Planet Tulsa. I mean, there were 10,000, almost 10,000 citizens that gave input. And it's an outline, it's a blueprint for the future. But the dialogue has to continue. And I was on the outside of that dialogue, just reading about it in the paper. But it seemed to me that there became a point where it was, rather than it was Tulsans moving forward for Tulsa's future and how could we compromise, it was almost an us versus them argument. And that's not what planning is supposed to be about. I mean, we all have to live together in this city, but also in the neighborhoods. And neighborhoods means houses and businesses and nonprofits and multifamily dwellings and retail businesses. We have to figure out how we all, it's like a family. How do we all survive together and support each other's needs to be the very best? And that's about early dialogue and early communication. And I sensed it, to me, just being on the outside, and I don't know that that however that dialogue occurred, people drew a line on the sand and they're still on the opposite sides of the court. We need to bring them together for a dialogue. And I've seen that happen. The Crutchfield neighborhood is the very best example. It's industrial, heavy industrial, and neighborhoods. That neighborhood has the best human capital for a dialogue in a tough area of any place I've seen.
Now, will that be an area of emphasis for you? Because aren't there city-owned developmental plots around that?
Yes, and Habitat for Humanity has taken that neighborhood in as well. I've spent a fair amount of time in that neighborhood, and it's a compelling area because the people that own homes there really want to make a difference. The industrial partners really want to be good partners, and now we have Habitat. So I think it's a great area to focus. But there are many areas of our city where we have substandard housing, where we need neighborhood revitalization. We began that in Kendall Whittier. It's a long process, but we're really seeing the results now. I think we'll see some work in Eugene Fields. I frankly would like to see us look at an area that I think is ripe for redevelopment, and that is 36th Street North and the neighborhoods around it.
All right. Well, we're just about out of time. June 11th, folks will go to the polls. Why should they choose you for the next mayor?
Well, I have the energy, the passion, the enthusiasm, and I think the proven leadership to work with a collaborative group to make this city the very best city it can be for our kids and our grandkids, for future generations. So I hope people will trust me with their vote on June 11th.
All right. Kathy Taylor, thanks very much for
joining us.
Thank you. Former Tulsa Mayor Kathy Taylor speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. She was Tulsa's 38th mayor from 2006 to 2009. She is seeking a second term in the election coming up June 11th. Tomorrow and Thursday, we'll talk with the other candidates, Bill Christensen and incumbent Mayor Dewey Bartlett. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. If you missed one of our recent programs, they're available online anytime at publicradiotulsa.org. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.
The Starlight Concert Series is pleased to begin its 67th season of free, family-friendly concerts here in Tulsa, June 11th, Tuesday night at 8 p.m. The season will kick off at the River West Festival Park on the west bank of the Arkansas River as the Starlight Jazz Orchestra plays greatest hits from the big band era. You can bring friends and family, a blanket or lawn chairs, a picnic even, to enjoy this great local tradition. More information at starlightbands.net.